character. I'm going totally out of any logical format here, but I'm just going to jump around with things. Olympic lifting is a subject that most people don't really understand. They don't really realize how much athleticism is involved. It's not laying down on a bench and bench pressing a heavy weight or picking up a heavy weight off the floor in a deadlift. It's getting that weight from the floor to over your head in a fraction of a second and catching it. It's about speed and about coordination, and it's just so much harder than anyone could imagine. At 76, you're obviously still training hard. Can we talk about some of the injuries that you've dealt with in your weight training as a bodybuilder and as an Olympic lifter, and how you train now differently because of the aches and pains?
I think one of the things that has kept me going is I keep looking for ways that I can improve. That the biggest motivator is progress. So when I got to be about 35, I knew I was pretty much at the end of my rope on Olympic lifting. I didn't see that I could get much better. But it wasn't because of injuries. I didn't have any major injuries, frankly. But I did look around at bodybuilding, and I thought that I could make progress there because I had developed the muscles of the low back and the traps and stuff like that.
The legs.
That bodybuilders don't have, but I was behind on the chest and arms and so on, and I knew I could make progress there, so that's why I switched to the physique, and obviously I did make progress. And I've also looked for things like the concept to roar, which can be very intense, but it's easier on the joints. And one of my rules is that if it hurts, don't do it. But you can usually find a way to lift with plenty of effort without hurting your joints. So I've done that. I'm not doing the quick lifts, not doing the Olympic lifts now, because there's a lot of, you're certainly right about the athleticism that involved there. I think that the Olympic lifters are some of the best athletes in the world, and one of the fastest, it was timed, my friend Carl Miller, who was the national USA weightlifting coach, was timed in one of the Olympics, and the fastest motion in the Olympics was the two-hand snatch, where they're lifting the weight from the floor overhead in one motion. So it certainly is an athletic thing, but there's a lot of very kind of extreme joint positions and things there. So I think you do have to back off when you find that you're hurting yourself. And the bodybuilding was much better for that. And I'm doing things like the roar that I mentioned in the take charge. I talk about the ski erg. In fact, I show a picture of it on the back. Where the roar, you're extending your body. Everybody knows what a row is, but it's using the legs very forcefully. The ski erg, you're standing up and you're pulling down in like a ski pole position. So you're contracting your body. It's using the muscles on the front of the body, where the rower is more the body, muscles on the back of the body. So I combine those two forms of exercise, and you're able to combine basically a strength and endurance exercise together with those two things. So I've constantly looked at ways to train that don't hurt. One of the things that I do have, I have a stenosis in my back that's a narrowing of the lumbars, which gives me a tender back. So I squatted until I was about 65, but I stopped squatting because it was irritating the back, giving me some numbness in my feet, some things. I switched to leg presses, where your back is supported. You can do very heavy leg presses, get a very good effect without doing squats. I'm doing hyperextensions on a machine where I can bend pull myself up with my hamstrings, and so you can get a very good training effect for your lower back, for your glutes, and for your hamstrings, without compressing your spine. So I constantly look for ways to keep training my body effectively with while avoiding the things that hurt.
Well, that's the key to longevity, is the things that, like you said, it's the old joke, Doc, it hurts when I do this, so don't do that. It's not complicated.
It's common sense, it seems like, but some people, they just push on. They don't want to stop. They're stubborn, and it's better to stop. They're going to be sorry later on if they don't. I think we all take it a little further than we should have, but if we're smart, we'll stop before we get too far down the road.
Well, I'm going to just throw in another aside here, and this is something I'm willing to bet that you don't know. Most cardio equipment is not accessible to blind people. And I'm just throwing this in just because it's an interesting thing. And you mentioned the Concept 2 rower and the Ski Erg. Is that also made by Concept 2?
Yes.
Then I'm guessing it has the same technology in it. The Concept 2 rower.
It uses exactly the same monitor and the same wheel, the same force mechanism. It's exactly the same.
Well, in that case, I'm sure it's exactly the same in that the Concept 2 rower is the only piece of cardio equipment that I know of that is totally accessible to somebody who can't see. You know how you can compete against other people in the rowing and so forth with the iPhone app that you attach to it or a laptop that you can attach to it, and it's a totally accessible piece of cardio equipment. It's also great as far as no stress on the knees, no stress on the joints. I like it much better than using a stepper or jogging or anything of that nature. But now,
I'm aware of that. That's really good to know. It's the monitor that makes those Concept 2 machines so wonderful, because you can measure progress. You can set it for, as you know, set it for intervals, and the monitor tells you your pace with every rep, every pull. Tells you your average time for the interval, and then it remembers it. So when you go back to train the next time, you can go back and look at the memory. And I'm always trying to improve. I sit down to think about every workout before I do it, and I'm always trying to improve. I say when you're just training to maintain your toast, because you lose your motivation if you're not making progress. But C2 monitors lend themselves to this in just a wonderful way, and that's why I've stressed them so much in the books and also on our website. That monitor is just marvelous. As you mentioned, it allows you to compete with people around the world. Their world ranking system is just fabulous, where it's men and women, heavyweight, lightweight, within various age categories and distances going from 500 meters to the marathon. And I love those people, man. I've sold a lot of machines for them. When the people call and mention my name, they know who I am.
And that in itself is going to add to your motivation, because you're not just competing against yourself. You can be sitting on that rower in your basement or your garage by yourself and competing against somebody in Istanbul.
And that's wonderful. You have to have the right mindset on that. It's not that you're not going to be satisfied if you're number one, because there's only one number one. But on that, if you go look on the ranking system, you can always find somebody just a little bit ahead of you. So that's such a wonderful motivation to try to pass that person. And it may just be a fraction of a second, but it just makes it so much more interesting. And as you say, you can be in your basement there and competing with somebody Istanbul. I mean, that's a big deal, because motivation is just such an important thing. We also have three DVDs, Ripped 1 and Ripped 2, and Ripped 3, but the third DVD is strictly about motivation. And we use the Concept 2 rower to illustrate in there about motivation. But stuff isn't good unless you have some feedback to show that you're making progress, and that the monitors, and they improve it. They get better and better, where now you could, as you mentioned, be online, and I didn't understand this factor that allows you to use it, but that's a great thing to hear. I'm delighted to hear that.
It's very positive thing, because most treadmills, ellipticals, so on and so forth, are not, and they're also, you're obviously not competing against other people and able to go online and have that motivation. And the reality is that there aren't enough blind people that are out there to make the companies that manufacture these things decide, well, let's make it talk or let's make it more accessible, because they're not going to sell that many of them. That's just the reality of it. But I don't know that Concept 2 was going for that when they did this, but because you can go online with it and utilize the iPhone, that just brings it to that level of accessibility. So I don't know if they were shooting for that or if it's just a bonus, but it's a great thing. Now,
absolutely. I think talking about the aerobic, I think most people, they don't understand the importance of having some sprints or having something going hard. And also that they're losing a motivational factor. You see people go into a gym and they're on the bicycle or they're even on the other machines, and they're reading the newspaper. And it's just ridiculous. And they think that they're doing it the right way, this moderate intensity, steady state, that's the best way. I think that was one of the main things that I think that I do most effectively in the book, is explaining that intensity is important, that you're losing the benefit on half your body if you don't go hard, at least part of the time. When you go hard, of course, you also have to rest more, because it takes your body longer to recover. You can train harder, but when you train harder, you have to train less. We talk a lot about that too.
Well, that kind of leads me to the next thing that I was going to ask you about, kind of indirectly, and just, it's, you know, what you're saying, though, is so true. I've always looked at people in the gym, and they're sitting there with the newspaper, with their magazine, or the best, every gym now has TVs in front of each treadmill and each elliptical. I'm sorry, but I've always thought, even if I'm doing cardio, I should be focused on what I'm doing, not just mindlessly doing it. But
I agree completely. I usually have the TV on when I'm rowing, but it just kind of, it's a background thing. When you really get going, you don't see that. If you're doing it right, you don't see the TV. You don't see anything except that monitor and see what's happening. But they don't understand that. And you mentioned at the beginning here, that's one of the things that I really focus on in the book, is the importance of intensity. And we have more and more studies proving the benefits of intensity. This article that I've written about the heart, which will be posted the next time, has a lot in there about it's the combination of endurance training and strength training that builds the heart, builds a stronger and more efficient heart. It's a wonderful article. I think it's one of the best articles I've ever written. I mean, I learned so much about the heart, and I'm looking forward to getting it posted so people can see what they can give us some feedback. But to be truly fit, you have to train both long and hard.
Well, what I wanted to get into with you now is training frequency. Obviously, when you were a younger man, you trained more frequently because the body can recuperate better when you're younger. But just before we even got to the bodybuilding, when you trained as an Olympic lifter, how often did you train? When you trained as a bodybuilder, how often did you train? And now, how often do you train?
Well, as a lifter, I don't remember exactly, but I don't think I trained more than four days a week. Pretty much the same as a bodybuilder. And when I in the Take Charge book, I talk about training three times a week, which was I alternate. I'm doing two strength training and one aerobic 1 week, and then two aerobic and one strength the next week. And just recently, I've dropped back to two times a week, where I'm doing four different routines, and I do two strength routines and two aerobic routines. I train on Tuesday and on Saturday, it would be one of the strength routines on Tuesday, then the aerobic routine on Saturday. And I've been surprised that my results are better, because I have, of course, all of the workout, all four are hard. They're better, and I feel less soreness. I feel better. I have more energy. I was a little surprised that I knew I had to do that because I just wasn't recovering. There was a big conference at the University of Texas at Austin about this Take Charge book, where a lot of the researchers, the professors that were doing the research, the studies that I talked about in the book, we had them actually gather together there at the Stark Center for Physical Culture at the University of Texas, and we had a conference talking about some of the things in the book. It was a huge success, and the interesting thing was that they paid their own way to come. We didn't have any money to pay them to come, and they came on their own, and we had about 72 people there. It was a hell of a deal. Anyway, the point was that made me miss my training. So when I came back on the rower, I thought, I'm going to have to work back up again, and I was stronger than before with that longer rest. I think a lot of people, anybody that's trained with weights or trained for a long time, has had that experience. But I'm having an experience again now, having dropped back to the 2 times a week. And I think it is important to stay active between workouts. There's a chapter in the book called Too Much Sitting, and that it's important to keep moving around, because moving around is what helps circulate the blood throughout your body, helps your heart pump blood, pumps blood to your brain. So I do make it a point to be active, and I have a walking regimen that I do on my off days. I'm doing something every day, but the hard workouts are only twice a week.
And how long do those workouts last, generally?
Counting warm up and cool down and everything, probably about an hour.
See, that's all you need, and it's great to hear that, because I see people that are my age, I'm 55, up to in their 60s and 70s that still think they should be in the gym 5 days a week for 2 hours a day. I don't know how they can possibly recover. I think they would be so happy if they cut their workout time in half and their days down, and all of a sudden they'd start growing again.
Absolutely. That's so important. There's only two things that are really important, and that is intensity and rest. And as you get more intense, you got to rest longer. But that's what makes the body respond, both on the aerobic side and the strength side. And then there's just I should have said overload. Overload and rest are the two main variables, but there's many different ways to do that. So many people say you got to do it this certain way. You got to hold your eyes a certain way, hold your mouth a certain way. When the truth is, and that's what this Take Charge book is mainly pointing out, that there's so many different ways to do this, and almost everybody can find a way that appeals to them, that works for them, and then that they enjoy and makes their life better. You don't have to train every day. In fact, it's better if you don't.
If you train every day, it becomes drudgery. If you only train 2 or 3 times a week, you get excited about your workouts. A few years ago, I was doing the 4 or 5 days a week, kind of, as you said, maintaining your toast. Well, I was just thinking, okay, I'm 50 years old, I'm done with the heavy lifting, I'm just going to go and maintain. And it was drudgery. And I came across I can't recall whose website. And they talked about heavy, basic training, compound movements, training only 2 or 3 days a week and taking lots of rest and no more than 45 minute to an hour workouts. I started training that way, and it got to be fun again. And it has to be fun, or it's not worth doing it.
That's right. You're just not going to stay motivated doing something you don't enjoy doing. You've got to enjoy it. And that's, again, back to the theme of Take Charge. You find a way that appeals to you. Find a way in an area that you're good at and that you enjoy. That's not to say that it's easy, but still you feel rewarded. You feel uplifted by your workouts, and you want to do it again. If you're somebody like me, I've been training for over 65 years now. God, that sounds long. But the results have been so good that I wouldn't dream of stopping. I mean, it's been the best thing in my whole life.
It's been the only stabilizer in my time, in my life. With the times that my life was really bad for various reasons, when I walked in a gym, everything was okay.
That's right. I talked about that first in my book, Rip 2. And there's an article on our website now. It's called Remembering Roger Wright. And I talked about Roger Wright in Rip 2. He was an old training partner of mine, and I hadn't seen him for a while, and he came for a visit. And we had this long conversation, which I wrote about in Rip 2. But he said that training for him was like a ball of string. It's something that held his body together, held his life together. And as long as things were going well in the gym, that everything else was going well too. Expressed that very, very well. And I hadn't been in touch with him for a while. And I read in the newspaper that he had died. He's only 65 years old. And he had been fighting cancer for 20 years. And they had a memorial, and Carol and I went to it. And it was just so moving to hear about his. He was a school teacher. People just loved him. He was a principal in several different schools. But I connected that, and then I talked to his daughter, and he had continued with his training even up to a few days before he died, and it gave him a sense of being in control of his life, control of his body, and said that he was never bitter about this cancer. He had a cancer of the sinus, terrible thing. But I developed that article quite a bit on the website. You can find that again. The new articles are always listed, new in July, and then down below there's a list of about 20 articles of continuing interest. We think they're all of continuing interest, but still those are the kind of new ones. And you'll find that Remembering Roger Wright article there. And it's another article. I just loved writing about him because his story was so positive. It illustrates what you just said about the exercise, your workouts, that being kind of a stabilizing factor in your life. Obviously, you've had some ups and downs, and we all have. But to have Roger fighting that cancer for 20 years, and that how important that his lifting was in his life, it just. Frankly, when I went to that memorial, I generally don't like to cry in public, but man, I sure cried at that. They ended the service with, he could sing. He had a great voice. And I forget. And they, at the end, they played, they had a recording of him. I think it's I'll Be Seeing You. And it was just so, it wasn't a dry eye. I in the house after he finished, they closed with that, him actually singing that at the memorial. I'm sorry I get sidetracked and I can't seem to stop.
Don't apologize for that, Clarence. That's the best thing. The stories and hearing you. You know, it's getting... The stuff that's not in the books is what I've always enjoyed. When I listen to an interview, personally, I listen to some interviews and I hear the interviewer talking more than the guest. And that drives me nuts. I try to interject things and I try and steer you where I might want to go, but I'd rather just shut up and let you do all the talking because that's what the people want to hear. They can hear me anytime.
Well, I enjoy doing these interviews because they're not canned. You know, I don't know. You invited me to give you some questions, but I said I would rather not give you questions and let you ask what you're interested in. I think it makes for a much better interview, and it certainly makes it a lot more fun for me, and I hope everybody else.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I had a framework in my mind of some questions, but as you can tell, since we're not going in any kind of chronological order, I just kind of pull things out of the air as they come into my mind, or something you might say makes me go, hey, that's a good direction to go. And I think doing it freeform like this does make it more entertaining for people that are listening.
Well, I'm certainly enjoying it.
I'm glad. Let me ask you, obviously there's tons of great information on the website, and I strongly encourage everyone to go sit and read. Make yourself a pot of coffee and just sit down and start reading, because you'll read one, then you'll go, oh, okay, and then you'll find another. Now, I had just, before I called you, just read the article on the Austin conference that you were talking about, and I noticed that one of the researchers, I believe, teaches at the University of Miami, and I thought, maybe I should try and get in touch with him for an interview. I'll use Clarence's name and see if I can get this guy to do an interview for me.
Joe Signorelli, he's very verbal, he's very accessible. I think he would love to do it.
Excellent.
He's got a wonderful comment on the back of the cover of my book. And he's the one that wrote the Bending the Aging Curve book. So he was a wonderful contribution to that, to the conference. It was really wonderful getting to know him. He's just a very, very likable, very knowledgeable, but friendly guy.
Well, this is obviously a public service announcement for my next interview.
Let me know. I want to definitely hear that.
I will definitely let you know. I will make contact with him very soon, because I'm trying to put as many interviews on the site as I can, because quite honestly, you can read text all day long, but hearing a person's voice and hearing their enthusiasm and hearing their emotion is just much more interesting.
I agree.
So I'm going to make an effort. I'm not in a position to do a weekly podcast or a daily podcast like one gentleman out there is doing. That would be my aspiration, but it's not so easy to line up guests and keep it interesting. So one of the main goals when I launched this website was to have as much audio information on there as possible. And people like yourself and whoever else I can dig up that's willing to talk to me are going to fill the pages of the website. I want to wrap this up because we've been on here for a while, but I wanted to go to another direction that's covered in the new book, Take Charge, in case anyone didn't catch the name the first 20 times either one of us mentioned it. You talk about exercise enhancing mental health, slowing Alzheimer's, slowing dementia. You want to touch on that a little bit?
That's another amazing breakthrough. There's a professor, John Ratty, or I guess it's, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, Ratty, R-A-T-E-Y. He's a psychiatrist at Harvard University, and he's written a book called Spark, Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain. And he's talking about the importance of that exercise is so important in developing the brain. And the spark relates to something called MDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And he had been involved with his patients and knew the benefits of exercise. I think sometimes he would take them on walks and so on. So he was a believer in the connection between exercise and brain function. And what really set him off and produced, motivated them to write this book, was they learned that they trained rats and on the treadmill, and they found that they were producing this MDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And he had an occasion to be in the laboratory looking at brain cells under the microscope and pouring this BDNF on it, sprinkling it or whatever, and before his very eyes, the cells started sprouting new branches. And he said, and so you were actually able to see, to visualize the effect of exercise on the brain. And this BDNF, which is produced by exercise, creates the structure in your brain so that it's the connection. It's that what really makes your brain work is one part of the brain being connected to the other, so the ideas can be transferred back and forth. You can connect the dots and so on. And just a wonderful book that he's written. I've written a big article about his book on the website, and there's a whole chapter on exercise and the brain in the book, which features that article. But you just don't realize. And again, it's modern technology that has allowed us to find and actually allow him to look under the microscope and seeing these brain cells sprouting different branches with something that's produced by exercise. And there's a number of different sections to that chapter, but one of them talks about this, and there's a lot of other things that studies that showed the benefit of exercise and brain function. I just written an article for the website. I think we just posted it this last time about walking and about physical activity making you more creative. It's a wonderful study. You should go take a look at it. But in 100% of the cases, they found that students were more productive when they were walking than they were if they were sitting. There's an old saying, don't ever trust any idea that comes to you sitting down, and I believe that. It's developed to quite a considerable extent in the chapter in the book on exercise in the brain.
Now, you said that study showed 100%?
They had them doing certainly studies. I forget what the tests were, but it was say that a button, they asked them to give how many uses they could think of for a button, and they had to give them these tests, one where they're just sitting there, and another where they're walking, or they have walked for 30 minutes, and for some of these tests, 100% of them were more creative after the walk than they were sitting down.
Well, that's
obviously depends on the test. Others were 80%. But anyway, it was very definitive that the moving and the walking does stimulate your brain function.
Well, your blood's circulating better. More blood circulating to your brain when you're moving around, which is something you mentioned earlier. But the point I was making.
And then you get this BDNF, which Dr. Rady calls Miracle Grow for the brain.
Gotta love that. The point, though, wasn't even what the test was. The point that I really wanted to emphasize was 100%. That's amazing. You never hear 100%.
Right. That could be the difference between they came up with 5 instead of 4, so it's not 100% volume, but the 100% were more active when they were, their brain was working better and more creative when they were walking.
Well, that's, you can't get much more definitive than that.
I love that, because I've been saying it for a long time.
Isn't it great when things that you've said and things that you've advised people on, and you couldn't really back them up, you just knew it was right. Isn't it great when somebody else comes out with a study and shows, gee, you were right all along?
It gives people like me something to write about, books and so on. I've long had the experience that when I'm working on an article and I just can't quite put it together. I've got the information in my head, but I'm not connecting it up. And I go out for a walk, and it seems like, you know, before you're even a block away, everything starts falling together. I've had this happen over and over. So I was certainly a believer before I ever read anything about those studies.
Well, that's great, but it just, like I'm saying, when we were first talking about the high-intensity interval training, I've always known that was the way to go to burn body fat. Just purely talking about the cosmetics, because that's what I dealt with in the gym, teaching people to look better, because that's what 90% of them wanted. The health is a secondary for most people when they go in the gym. The primary is the cosmetic. And I always knew the sprinting and the high intensity, short duration was the way, but I couldn't justify it and couldn't prove it. And so it's like, here we go, 20 years later, you just wrote a book that's full of studies that, that prove it's all true.
Absolutely. It's definitely true. I'm like you, I've believed it forever. Now we can actually prove it.
I think in my case, it was just that I hated to run and it was my excuse, but it turned out right.
I did too. I went out for wrestling in high school. And I liked the wrestling all right, but I hated the running afterwards.
Wrestling training, I guess they had you running steps?
Well, not steps. We were just running around the football field, but I didn't like that.
Yeah, I never could understand people that love to run. Well, I'm going to wrap this up, so I would like to know what else Mr. Bass would like to say in conclusion, and then we'll call it a day, because I know you have other things to do with your day.
Well, just thank you very much for thinking of me and asking me, and I love talking to you. Your questions were great, and I hope people enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed talking with you. I look forward to let me know when it's up so we can link to it on our website, and continued success with your training and with your gym and with your website.
Well,
I guess you don't have a gym now, but you're still doing massage therapy, right?
Yes, I still do massage. I still occasionally train someone, and the website is a new venture. And believe me, I'd love to get back in the gym business, but I don't know how that's going to happen. Well, you never know. In closing, the website is
CBASS. I can't spell Clarence, so just the letter C, Bass, BASS.com. Very easy, CBASS.com.
And there are tons of free articles there, close to 400, as he said. There are photographs of Clarence over the years, and from what I've been told, they don't look a whole lot different as they as the time goes by. And there's also links to his products, all 10 of his books, which are all definitely worth reading. The DVDs of the Ripped thing, which are, I guess, kind of like in a seminar environment.
We try to illustrate things on a DVD that you just can't get through to people on paper so that they can read about it and then actually see it. Covers a lot of different things. The first two are kind of mirror the information that's in the books, and the third one is focused on just on motivation. So we recommend all of them, and people seem to like them, so we encourage them to check those out. On our products page, they can read about what's in each of the books and each of the DVDs, and people have questions, they can always email us. The email address is on the website, and when people buy our books, we tell them that they read the book. If they have questions, they're welcome to email us, and we get a lot of emails, and we try to answer them all.
Well, that's highly commendable. It's not easy to do. And if you really want to take it to the next level, Clarence is also available for phone consultations, and I believe you can travel out to Phoenix, is it, where you are these days, and actually
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Albuquerque. I was close. Right into the country. You can actually fly.
1 and 2 day consultations. People seem to like it. Obviously, it's the motivated people that come. We've had people from all over the world. Always wonderful people.
Well, that's exciting. And there is nothing, and I've not done it with Clarence, but I've had the opportunity when I had the gym to have top people in bodybuilding training in my gym and the opportunity to pick their brain, and you can read the books, you can look at the DVDs, but to actually sit down with somebody who has lived it, who has done it, and say, look, what do you really do? And okay, look at me, look at my body type, what do you think I really should do? And there's nothing like that one-on-one kind of a situation to really motivate yourself and to get all the secrets. And there really are no secrets. It's just all about hard work and intelligent work. But if you have the opportunity, you know, go see Clarence and his wife, and you're going to probably learn more in that 1 or 2 days than you could in reading books for the next 5 years.
Well, I think actually having him sit there and eat with us and talk with us and train with us, I think it really is beneficial, and we always enjoy it. And thanks for the plug.
Hey, that's not a problem. I wouldn't support it. Wouldn't support you if I didn't believe what I was saying was 100% true. So I'm going to wrap this up now, and don't be surprised if there is not a follow-up interview with Clarence at some time in the future, because if I know him, there's going to be another book in a couple years, and he's going to probably be the fittest, most muscular guy walking around at 90, and hopefully we'll be doing one of these then, and I'll be going, well, now I'm 70, and I still don't look as good as you.
Really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Clarence. This is Bill from COSIOB.